Okay, let's begin. What I'd like to discuss with you tonight again, this is Life in the Heights, and Life in the Heights as related to the Eruv. Just word about the Eruv. The Eruv did not always exist in Washington Heights. In fact, my guess is that half of the people in this room remember the Heights without an Eruv,
yes.
And then the other half of the people in this room cannot imagine how is it possible
exactly.
To live in the Heights without an Eruv. The Eruv was put up 11 years ago. 11 years ago, Parshas Bahar was the first Shabbos. Just to give credit where credit is due, the people who really pushed for the Eruv to come up, there was a fellow Ben Sandler, who was a president of Mount Sinai. Ben Sandler and James Wolfe were the people who really, really pushed for the Eruv to be put up. What's interesting is that there was a whole history about the Eruv in Washington Heights long, long before this Mount Sinai Eruv was built. When I became the rabbi here, so I got a file cabinet in my office that Rabbi Schneidman left papers for me. He said they might be interesting. So one night, I'm like flipping through these papers, and I notice that there is a handwritten note from Rabbi Mordechai Schneidman about a meeting for the construction of an Eruv. It was a top secret meeting. It happened in Rabbi Ellis Block's office in MTA, in the high school. And present at that meeting was Rabbi Schneidman and Rabbi Block. And present at the meeting was Rav Schechter. And the plan was that they would build an Eruv, and they scanned out the territory to try to build an Eruv in the Heights. Well, what happened was that for a whole host of reasons, that project became stillborn, largely because Rabbi Gelli, I forget Rabbi Gelli or Rabbi Schwab.
Which year was it?
Well, I'd have to check the notes exactly which year it was.
Rabbi Gelli came in 87.
In 97?
87.
Yeah, so this meeting was in the 80s. I don't remember exactly, but basically one of the Breuer's Rabbonim found out about it, and then the plan sort of died. Years ago, Rabbi Mordechai Cohen, who's the assistant dean of the Bernard Revel Graduate School, was here in Shul for Shabbos, and I told him, you know, Rabbi Cohen, on that Eruv meeting, there are notes that are typed by you about a possible, like all the halachic rationale for building the Eruv here in the Heights. So Rabbi Cohen, Rabbi Professor Dr. Mordechai Cohen, says, yeah, sure, he was learning in the Kollel, and Rav Schechter asked him to put something together on it, and he put it together, and he was like telling me about which computer he typed it on, and that computer got lost. He remembered the whole thing. So there is a history. I gave those documents to Ben Sandler, and they had an Eruv exhibit in, which museum had the Eruv exhibit not so long ago? Was it the YU Museum?
YU Museum in the Center for Jewish History.
In the Center of Jewish History. So at the Eruv exhibit, there were some documents from our Washington Heights Eruv that was put up. Now, just a little bit about the Eruv here in town. The Eruv is controversial. I would say it's not more controversial than other metropolitan Eruv in other communities. But, you know, there are fights. One thing, it's funny, I think the speech I gave when the Shabbos of, there was, what happened was, my prava, my test, was Parshas Mishpatim, actually, 10 years ago. And then after my test, Ben Sandler called me, he wanted me to spend one Shabbos here in the shul before the vote, before the membership voted to make me the rabbi, so that was Parshas Emor. And Parshas Emor has a whole discussion about the Yomim Tovim, and what I said as my sermon that Shabbos is that, you know, fundamentally, Yontiv is different than Shabbos. The Meshech Chochma points out that the goal of Shabbos is to establish a relationship between us and Hashem. But the goal of a Yontiv is to establish a relationship between Jews. And that's why, since on Yontiv we're trying to establish a relationship between Jews, that's why on Yontiv, Ochal Nefesh is permitted. I'm allowed to cook on Yom Tov because a good way to establish a relationship with people is you cook fresh food, people come over, yum, yum, delicious. And because Yom Tov is about establishing a relationship with between Jews, that's why in Yom Tov you're allowed to carry. Because, says the Meshech Chachma, when I carry stuff to your house, I could bring you reading material, I could bring you food, I could bring you stuff that will create more of a bond. So the Meshech Chachma says the fundamental difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos is Shabbos is about our relationship with Hashem, and Yom Tov is about our relationship with each other. Beautiful. So my sermon that I gave is that to a limited extent, Mount Sinai is trying to make every Shabbos into a bit of a yontif. Because we have an Erev. And the Erev allows us to carry... We can't cook on Shabbos, even with an Erev. But the Erev allows us to carry on Shabbos, and therefore we can establish more of a relationship. And Erev is supposed to mean that we are Me'urav, we're all mixed together, we're all united. A beautiful idea of Erev. But the funny thing is, and I'll take your comments in a second, the funny thing is that although Erev is supposed to unite all of us together, some of the most bitter fights in Judaism are about Erev. When I first became the rabbi here, I don't know how many of you remember, on one Shabbos morning, a boy was practicing for his bar mitzvah, and the Sefer Torah fell off of the bima. And a few people were in the show when this happened, so I wrote a note to the community that, you know, those people who were present should really fast if you're weak, or if you study Torah and the fasting will take away from your study of Torah, you should donate money to tzedakah instead of the fast. So I wrote a letter to the community what to do. Next thing I know, I got a letter sent from an anonymous address called the VAD for Preservation of the Sanctity of Shabbos in Washington Heights. Dear Rabbi Schwartz, perhaps the reason why your community suffered this terrible thing of the Sefer Torah falling is because you support the Erev. And yes, I am proud to be the Erev Rav. I am happy that we support the Erev. I don't know who wrote me this letter. I still have it. It's like, you know, it's a souvenir. It's a good thing. What? I didn't frame it. I have it in my head.
It's in the file.
No, actually, I have that at home. Maybe I should bring it to the file also. But, I mean, it's funny that Erev really is supposed to bring us closer together, and some of the most bitter fights are about Erev. Now, our community, Erev, is the same as any Erev in the metropolitan community. There is a halachic question. I give you a section over here about Rishus HaRabim issues. The halacha, the Gemara in Erev and Daf Vav tells us that if something is really a public thoroughfare, you can't build a standard Erev there. The standard Erev is a Tzuras HaPesach. Pole, beam on top. If something is really a public thoroughfare, you need doors. And the doors have to be closed at night. Right? Yirmirushalayim, omali dasasen, ulos balaylo, hayuchayovin ala mishum, rishas harabim. The Gemara says that Yerushalayim would have been rishas harabim if not for the fact that doors closed at night. And if a city is Rabbi Rishus HaRabim, you have to have doors closing. And let's be honest, that's not so feasible. To have doors closing at night is not so feasible. The question, though, is what's the definition of Rishus HaRabim? And there are a number of rules and regulations. Right? The first opinion in the Shulchan Aruch is that any street that is 16 amos wide, 16 amos is 32 feet, is considered Rishus HaRabim. Ezahu Rishus HaRabim, Shulchan Aruch writes. If you have streets, marketplaces that are 16 amos wide, and they don't have a ceiling, and they don't have a wall around them, that is a Rishus HaRabim. And if they have a wall, if the street goes from Mefulash Mishar Lashar, goes from one gate of the city to the other gate, if it's a straight street, so then that's also a Rishus HaRabim. So now, are the streets on Washington Heights 16 amos wide? An amma is, let's take the position that an amma is 2 feet. So are the streets 32 feet wide? It's close. It depends if you include the parked cars or not.
From curb to curb.
From curb to curb. And some might even include the sidewalks. If you include the sidewalks, for sure it's more than 32 feet. So are our streets of Rishus HaRabim? Well, not exactly clear. According to this opinion, it might be Rishus HaRabim. However, the Ramah quotes another opinion
The opinion that north of Jerusalem has to be a street that 600,000 people go on that street every single day.
Right. There are no streets in Washington Heights, with the exception of the George Washington Bridge, that 600,000 people go on the street every day. The bridge? Now, it's very hard. After 9/11, it's very hard to get real transportation figures. If you call up and you say, oh, by the way, how many cars go on the bridge every day between the hours of 9 and 10 a.m., suddenly your phone is going to be getting all these surveillance things.
What do you want to do? Does that mean Broadway? You know, in Washington Heights or the entire length of Broadway?
So it probably means the entire length of Broadway.
On a weekday, he has that number. I mean,
so the thing about Broadway is as follows. Broadway is not a street that goes straight. You can no longer drive down the entire Broadway because at Times Square is closed off. Another point. Broadway is Makura. If you go to the bus terminal at 179th and Broadway. This is a point that Rabbi Yosef Gavriel Bechafer made when he came here, a scholar in residence. Oh, it was great to have someone with the last name Bechafer who's defending the Eruv, right?
Yes.
Yes, right? So Rabbi Bechafer, when he came as scholar in residence, he pointed out that because of the bridge terminal, there is an overhang on Broadway, no? It goes over the street.
Yep.
Now, does that mean that the entire street is not a Rishus Harabim? Or does that mean that just the area under the overhang is not a Rishus HaRabim? Well, it might at least mean that I can cut off the area beneath the overhang, the area south of the overhang, from the area north of the overhang. And do I have 600,000 people on Broadway north of the overhang? Again.
It doesn't impede traffic,
but one of the rules of Rishus HaRabim that we read is that to be a Rishus HaRabim, it has to be similar to what the Jewish people had in the desert, and there's no overhangs over there. So it's not similar to what they had in the desert. So we have a few rationales. There's no 600,000 people. It is Makura. The streets do curve. In cities that are surrounded by a wall, if the street curves, it's not Rishus HaRabim. One could argue that Manhattan is a city surrounded by a wall because we have the sea walls around it. Again, these arguments are somewhat far-fetched. But we have many different arguments that we can put together. And because we have many different arguments to put together, the assumption of my rebellion was that the Eruv in Washington Heights is fine. They encouraged me to extend the Eruv across Broadway. Now, I have to admit, I was not the first person to extend the Eruv across Broadway. When the Eruv over here, when it was built, Rabbi Ben Zion Wozner from Muncie was the Rav HaMachshir of it officially. They once called Rabbi Wozner on like a Friday, and they said, can we extend the Eruv across Broadway because of some technical, logistical issue with the Eruv? And he said, yes. There was one place down by like 190th, so the Eruv went across Broadway even before I was the rabbi. What I did is I connected the YU Eruv to the Mount Sinai Eruv. Now, if you look at our map over here, see the Eruv map? So this Eruv map is pretty good now. This is actually in. Now, a few things about this Eruv map. There's one part of this Eruv map where there is no string at all. If you look, you see where it says Castle Village? Castle Village, what we have over there, is basically there is a stone wall, a cliff, that goes down to the highway, to the Henry Hudson. No, right behind Castle Village.
It collapsed a few years ago.
What? It collapsed once, yeah. It was like kind of exciting.
I remember that.
And, but that area we do not use string. That area, the halacha is an Eruv has to be surrounding the city. No? So over here I have a wall that surrounds the back of Castle Village. Now, when I first came here, I did not take a walk around the back of Castle Village because you have to get like special permission from people, and it's not, they don't like it when you just like walk around their grounds back there. I trusted that Rabbi Wozner had done that, which he had. So I relied on him for this. Now Naftali Palachek, who lives in Castle Village, Naftali and Giwa, Naftali took me on a walk behind Castle Village, And I looked around and I saw where everything goes. There's a slightly complicated area over there because there's a parking lot, and which wall are we using of the lot, the inside, the outside, whatever. It's like a detail issue with an Erev, and trust me, it's fine. I can say that I looked at the whole thing, and I that area is fine. Now,
Jesus once said the wall had collapsed.
The time when the wall had collapsed, that would have been a real issue, yes.
Yeah.
Because it took them about a year or so to put
it. I think that was that before Erev? Was that after Erev?
During.
I think it was during.
It was during Erev. So, there are some areas of Castle Village where they have a fence in the back, and even after the wall collapsed, like, you still had the fence. Again, I don't remember exactly. I don't think I had seen that part. I don't think I had seen that part then. Now, the Erev that we have connects to the Yeshiva University Erev along Wadsworth Avenue. Effectively, to protect the innocent and the guilty, there are two separate Erevin in the Heights. The YU Erev and the Mount Sinai Erev, no? But really what we're doing is it's just like one wire that goes straight across Wadsworth. And that wire, right, if you're on this side of the wire, Mount Sinai Erev. That side of the wire, YU Erev. So technically if that wire is down, you still have an Erev because, right, the whole perimeter would count as an Erev. So that really should be okay. The feeling was that because Rav Schechter is also a member of Breuer's, and Rav Schechter is the Rav HaMachshir of the YU Erev, they feel somehow that, like, you know what, YU, that's Rav Schechter's territory, so that's okay. But the Mount Sinai Erev, they never felt, the Breuer's community never felt it was okay. Although, I have to admit, a few years ago, one of the best phone calls I ever got,
yes,
that made me the most happy, is I get a call from Rav Schechter on a Friday afternoon. He says, Rav Ezra, you should know, I just got a phone call that Rabbi Pulzin said that there's a line down on the Erev. And Rabbi Pulzin didn't know my number. He called Rav Schechter to call me. Now that is historic.
You bet.
That is historic. By the way, I'm not saying Rav Pulzin holds to the Erev. He doesn't. Right? But the fact is, I think at this point, the Breuer's community largely respects the fact that this Erev is not a joke. This Erev is done according to positions of genuine poskim. The Erev, yes, Rav Moshe Feinstein would not hold to this Erev, absolutely. Right? It's an Erev in Manhattan. Rav Moshe would say the Erev is pasul. And the sign that they have hanging in Breuer is that according to all that list of Gedolim, the Erev is pasul. Correct. But there are many other great Gedolim of equal stature to Rav Moshe. The Chazon Ish would be okay with this Erev. Right? So, if someone wants to not carry in the Erev, kol hakavod. What I tell people is the thing I really hate, though, is when a guy says, I'm not going to use the Erev, so you see his wife pushing a carriage with like three kids, carrying 16 bags. Like, don't do that. That's not nice. That's not nice. Someone once asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about that practice, about the wife using the Erev, not the husband. So Shlomo Zalman says, I don't understand it, unless you're going to tell me that the husband learned all of Maseches Erevin very well, and he has certain chumras, and his wife hasn't learned Erevin well yet. That's the way he said it, apparently. Again, sometimes people could have individual chumras. If someone doesn't want to carry, kol hakavod. But if I don't carry and I impose on you, right, if you're my Shabbos Yid, that's not good.
Can I just make one comment?
Yes.
I live in 50 Overlook, and a few years ago we had a family, like the Pinters, and they put a sukkah in the backyard, 50 Overlook. So Shabbos, Rabbi Posen, okay, kind of this diagonal area led from the entrance of the building, we have a canopy, to the basement entrance. So
mm-hmm.
We would be able to carry the Pinters.
Did it cross over any sidewalks?
Yes.
Interesting.
From the edge of the canopy to the basement.
Uh-huh. So, that's very interesting. I mean, again,
yeah.
It seems to me that, again, I said our Erev is the same as all the metropolitan Erevin. There's an Erev in London. You know who's the Rav HaMashia in the Erev in London now?
Yes.
His name is Gelli.
Gelli. Yes.
Rav Gelli. He's a very good Talmud Kof.
Where in London?
What?
Where in London?
In Golders Green and Hempford or something. Like in the Jewish communities of London, there's an Erev. Same as us. So it seems like the Rishus HaRabim issue, there is something to rely on, certainly. To me, the most difficult issue in an Erev is as follows. An Erev requires something that we call Tzchiras Rishus. Not before this past Pesach, but before the Pesach before that, I went to the police department and I rented the rights to use all of the streets in Washington Heights for ritual purposes. We did the lease for 20 years. The police department is not allowed to accept money from people because there have been all these scandals of Orthodox Jews giving police people money. Don't do that. So I gave them chocolate coins. They were okay with chocolate coins. Now remember, this is right before Pesach. I'm giving chocolate coins. My chocolate coins are left over from Hanukkah. Now, the commanding officer, Mundo, right, is the one I gave the chocolate coins to. And he was excited about chocolate coins. He takes a bite into these chocolate coins that are left from Hanukkah. Now, again, I think it's okay because the halacha of a Schiris Rishus is halacha you have to rent from the non-Jews the rights to use the community is that Schiris Rishus helps even Pachos Mishava Pruta. Even if you're not giving a nickel, that you're giving less than a nickel, but still that is sufficient for Schiris Rishus. Now, the reason why the Schiris Rishus is questionable is we do Schiris Rishus from the police department. What the police department effectively could do is barricade the streets. That's their role. They could close off the streets. But police departments can't really get into individual apartments in the building unless they get a warrant. No? So some poskim say, well, since they could get in with a warrant, that's good enough. Other poskim say, what are you talking about? Right? That means that they can't really get in. Now, in certain communities, when they do a Schiris Rishus, what they do is they rent the space from every building super. The building super is supposed to have your keys to the apartment. Right? The building super can get in case there is a leak or something, you know. Sometimes the super needs to get in. So you could rent it from the super. And that might be a better sort of rental. But in an era of our size, the feeling was to rent from every super in the community was prohibitive. So we only rented from the police department. So there is, again, this is what we rely on. This is what's relied on in every community Erev. It's not the strongest. If you'd ask me, the weaker point about the Erev is the Schiris Rishus. This is something I heard years ago when I was looking at the Farakaway Erev. I heard this from Rav Moshe Dov Stein, Zichron Lavrecha, was the posek in Shar Yashuv, and he said that he felt the weak point of the Farakaway Erev was the Schiris Rishus. That's what he said. Now, some posts can feel that in our buildings you don't really need Schiris Rishus, because there's a halacha that when there's Tfisas Yad Bal Habayis, when the owner of the building has something in your apartment that means that there's one person who owns it, you're not really the complete owner, so therefore it is okay without renting the space. Because just the owner has rights in every apartment. And some say since the owner of the building has a stove, a refrigerator, whatever we have in our apartments officially belongs to the landlord, no? So maybe that's enough. However, most poskim feel that no, since I'm using it, it's not the halacha of Tfisas Yad Bal Habayis is when the Bal Habayis puts something in my apartment that's his that I can't touch. If they give it to me and I'm using it, that's also questionable. It's a machlokes in the Dvar Avraham with Moshe Feinstein. These types of issues are big deals in Erevin, but again, what we do is the same as what they do everywhere on the planet. Our Erev is as good as any other Erev. I think that is the basic notion I wanted to make. Okay, what else should we discuss about the Erev? Everyone has the map. There's a blacked out area on 179th between 179th and 180th. What that basically is because of the construction by the Port Authority terminal over there, they put up fences. And the Eruv poles are now inside the fence on 179th. And the halacha is, if you have an Eruv pole that is inside a fence, that Eruv pole is very questionable. For example, let me give you the source of this. I thought I quoted that Mishnah Berurah. I read this again on the train now. I thought I quoted that Mishnah Berurah about if the Eruv, like the Makar Chayim, if the Eruv is inside an area that is fenced off, so that could raise a question for the Eruv. That's why 179th is not inside the Eruv. I just have to find the source. Here, the end of the Mishnah Berurah Kuf Yud Gimel, which is three sources from the bottom on the second page. Mishnah Berurah writes, Imamet HaKonim B'toch HaBayis O B'toch Geder HaMukav Midala Gruchotav Lav Klumhu. If you put the Kone is the post, inside a fenced off area, it's nothing. Even if only one of the two posts of the Tzuras HaPesach, that's actually what we have on 179th, that one of the, right, the Tzuras HaPesach goes across 179th, one of them is inside the fenced area, the other one isn't, so that invalidates the entire Eruv. So, that's an issue. Now, we have some other issues in our local Eruv, which also apply everywhere else in the world. If you look at the string blows in the wind. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. Right? So, the string... What can we do? Right? So, the string, it can blow a bit. That's a big discussion post-game. The Mishkanus Yankiv felt that if the string is blowing, the whole Eruv is puzzle. And the strings have to be taught. Now, there was an engineer who spoke to Rav Schechter about this years ago. Rav Schechter's like very into building Eruv in the communities. And this engineer said that there is no way that the strings that are used and the poles can be tight enough that it won't blow. If it would be tight enough that it won't blow, it would pull the poles down. It's really, like, based on halachos of engineering, it really... doesn't happen. So it probably means, like, how much does it blow? Do you notice it blow? It's very hard to judge. It's very hard to judge what's considered too much blowing. If there's a sag in the string on top, it's very hard to judge what's considered the type of sag that's kosher and not kosher. I tell the Eruv checkers, right, Frida, to alert me whenever you notice, like, a significant sag or something, or just to alert me and I'll take a look. But honestly, your guess is as good as mine on some level, because if the sag is so much, I give you a tshuva here from Sui Pesach Frank, that it goes down to less than 10 tefachim, so then, okay, then it's no good. But that's not going to happen, right? Now, what happens if they throw sneakers on the Eruv strings?
Then you can see.
Then you see the sag. Does that invalidate the Eruv? So the official YU Eruv guidelines that they put up when they built the YU Eruv is that the sneakers that are thrown on top do not invalidate the Eruv. And it's a kosher Eruv mit sneakers. So that's... That is the way... That is the way it is. Now,
Why is it, this may be a complicated question, but why is it that Rabbi Schechter said that if you put the string that goes across a bus shelter, it's numbered.
The bus shelters, yeah. So I have a chuv over here from the chuv is Elof L'Choshlombo from Shlomo Kluger. Basically, if the Erev goes on top of what is halachically Irishus Hayachid, right? Let's say I have a house, and my Erev is very high up, and it goes on top of the house. Right? Here's a house. And my Erev goes over the house, over the roof. So Shlomo Kluger assumes in that case, and many poskim assume this, in that case the Erev is actually posel. Because an Erev is a tzuras ha-pesach, is a doorway. Normal people don't have houses in the middle of their doorways. That's a doorway, no? Does anyone have a house in the middle of the doorway? That's not normal. That's not the way you build. So therefore, Rav Shlomo Kluger says it's not the Avdi Inchi, and therefore it's no good. So Rav Schechter's argument is that the bus stops are halachically houses. Because the halacha of a house is that you have four mechitzos. The bus stops have three mechitzos, really. One, two, right? Three. On the third side, there's a little bit of plexiglass, and there's a roof on top. And then the Alpi Halacha, there are rules of good aches mechitzta, right? There are rules that the roof can, like, go down and can create some sort of mechitza halachically. We go at the beginning, the Sukkah discusses these issues. So maybe, and there are halachas of pitikra yorv, so saying that the roof like goes down and cuts up, so maybe it's considered a rishus hayachid. So if the wire goes over the bus stops, that's why Rav Schechter felt it was a problem. Rav Schechter's original argument against this Eruv was the wires went over the bus stops. We have since changed that. Now, there is no wire that goes over the bus stops at this point because, you know, Rav Vosner no longer is really the Rav Hamachshir of the Eruv. When questions come up, they come to me now. We have not gone to Rav Vosner probably in 10 years. What?
It's a long time.
It's a long time. I have made changes in the Eruv myself. I've discussed it with Rav Schechter, discussed it with Rabbi Willig. But at this point, you know, I think since Rav Schechter is like the big Gadol in our community who holds of Erevin, we should build the Erev in accordance with his position, which our Erev currently is. Rav Schechter at this point, I've shown Rav Schechter not the entire Erev, I've shown him some of it, and Rav Schechter was okay with what he saw. I had one or two shilohs that I felt I had to show him in terms of like specific questions, and he has okayed it. So, yeah.
Discussion with a friend of Roy's who claims that because of the seriousness of the Shabbos laws, one violates with high skila karmis,
right?
So that one should be machmir and all these issues where there's a doubt or love or something.
Right, so I mean, I found my understanding is like this: when the Mishnah Berurah says to be machmir, not to have about Erevin because of the seriousness of the issue, the Mishnah Berurah's expression is hamachmir yachmir laatzmo. If you want to have a chumrah, make a private chumrah for yourself. But every rabbi of a community, the Gemara says, has a mitzvah to build an Erev. If people don't want to use the Erev on their own, kol hakavod. Hamachmir, yachmir la'atzmo. You want to be machmir yourself. Now, I do think that the majority of poskim are okay with our Erev. Not everybody. Not everybody. But the majority of poskim are okay. And my rebbeim are okay with it. So I'm very comfortable with this Erev. However, if someone would say, one of the first times sometimes like during the summer or during light times, I try to avoid the YU based medrash because it's hard to learn over there. Like people come and they ask me questions. So I go into the Breuer's based medrash to try to learn. So I sit down for like 10 minutes in the Breuer's based medrash, and then Rav Levy comes over to me and he says, I just want to discuss the Erev with you. Boom, I'm done learning for the day. Now, again, it happens. He's very respectful. It was a very good conversation. You know, Rav Manto, when I first became the rabbi here, his line to me is that we will have to agree to disagree about the Erev. I'm like, kol hakavod. I'm happy to agree to disagree. Breuers used to allow brisin to happen in shul on Shabbos because, like, originally the policy was that that all brisin in the Heights had to be done in an apartment so that no one would carry on Shabbos.
On Shabbos.
Right, a Shabbos bris. And then, at some point, the Breuer's community decided that, you know what, since the Erev does have oversight, if people want to carry and do the bris and chon Shabbos, that was okay. And we had a few bris in Shul. Daniel Coleman made a bris in Shul on Shabbos. Shlomo Ladler, Shlomo Michal made a bris in Shul on Shabbos. We've had a few bris in Shul on Shabbos. This past Shabbos, there was a bris on the YU side of the Heights, and the bris was in an apartment. And I heard, I have to speak to Pinchas Katzenstein, I heard that the community has changed their opinion. If they changed their opinion, call a kavod. You know, they're entitled to their opinion. You know, personally, I like doing bris in Shul on Shabbos. I think it's a very nice thing. What?
Is that a new thing?
I think it's a new thing. Yeah, because they used to do bris in... This past Shabbos, there's a bris on the YU side, and the bris is in an apartment. And what I heard, this is all secondhand, third hand, what I heard is that Rav Mantel changed his position. I should try to find out. I'll speak to Pinchas Katzenstein, I guess, and try to find out.
Because I remember he did one in Shul.
Yeah, he's done two in Shul that I remember.
He did
in
Shul.
Huh?
I don't remember which one it was.
Kaganov's bris was...
Somebody else. There were four Kaganov brises.
On Shabbos?
Not on Shabbos.
No.
They weren't all on Shabbos.
Kaganov was a member of Breuer's. They wouldn't have done it in our shul anyway. They wouldn't have done it in the Breuer shul either on Shabbos. Breuer's will not do a bris in their shul on Shabbos.
Okay.
A Breuer's bris will be done in an apartment.
I think the nurse carries the baby too.
Yeah, they have done that also sometimes. Yeah.
But what about When I first heard that Pinchas Katzenstein did one in Shul, he brought his tools over.
Yeah, they bring their tools over on Friday, of course. But the question is, by doing the bris in Shul, that means that they're allowing you to carry the baby on Shabbos, because the baby doesn't sleep in Shul. You know, we're not talking about Nick's kid, right? Nick's kid, we would not do it. Nick's kid, we would not do a bris on Shabbos. Right? Let's put that well on the table. Again, there's much more to say about the Erev. I wanted to discuss the question about when the Erev is down, how to carry, and the question of what happens if someone brings food to you on Shabbos from outside the Erev, whether you're allowed to eat that food. Maybe we'll discuss that next week, God willing, because it's a little late. And thank you for coming.
I can't wait to hear about that.
About what?
I can't wait to hear about that.
Okay, those are the fun.